Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 9th, 2016. We'll begin this portion of the program with the obituaries. Alexander C. Navy, that's spelled G-N-A-V-I, 95, of Decatur, passed away at 12:15 a.m. on Sunday, February 7th, at Primrose, Decatur, Illinois, with his daughter, Andrea, and Jason, his grandson, by his side. Funeral services will be 12 noon, Thursday, February 11th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, with visitation from 4 p.m. until 7 p.m., pardon me, until 6 p.m., on Wednesday, February 10th, at the funeral home. Burial will be at North Fork Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to Land of Lincoln Honor Flight. Margaret A. Hammond, 69, of Shelbyville, died at 7 a.m. Sunday, February 7th, in St. John's Hospital, Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Thursday, February 11th, in Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Shelbyville, with Reverend E. Wade Helmkamp officiating. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday in Hauanyaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville. Casual attire is requested. Burial will be in Jordan Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be given to Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Shelbyville, or the Down Syndrome Association of Greater St. Louis. Betty Park, 89, of Mount Zion, died Sunday, February 7th, 2016, at Fairhaven's Christian Home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 10th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, with visitation from 10 until 11 a.m. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to Parkway Church of the Nazarene. Bonnie Livergood Roush, R-O-U-S-H, age 60, pardon me, age 86, formerly of Decatur, passed away Sunday, January 31st, in Atlanta, Georgia. A memorial service will be held Saturday, February 13th, at 3 o'clock in the Chapel of Parrott Funeral Home, 8355 Sonoa Road Highway, 74, Fairburn, Georgia, 30213. Memorial contributions may be made to the First Church of Christ Scientist, 510 West William Street, Decatur, 62522. That's Decatur, Illinois. Teresa Aileen Stinson, 93, of Sullivan, passed away 11:05 p.m. Saturday, February 6th, at Sullivan Healthcare Center. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, February 12th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home, Sullivan. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, February 11th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Burial will be in Keller Cemetery, Lovington. Memorials may be made to the Sullivan Church of God in Sullivan. In another article related to deaths in the area, this headline reads, "Accident near Pena claims passenger." It is a H&R staff report. A 43-year-old Pena man died as a result of a one-vehicle crash about 2 miles west of Pena at 8:48 p.m. Sunday. Kevin Jean Thompson, the passenger in the vehicle, was pronounced dead at the scene, according to the Christian County Sheriff's Office. The driver of the vehicle, Matthew D. Swisher, 37, of rural Pena, was taken to Pena Community Hospital with serious injuries. He was then transported to Springfield Memorial Medical Center. Swisher was driving a 2004 Chevrolet Impala near 2180 East 350 North Road when he lost control of the vehicle, which went into a farm field and rolled several times. Both occupants were thrown from the vehicle and were not wearing seatbelts. Swisher was issued citations for DUI and improper lane usage. The accident is under investigation by the Christian County Sheriff's Office, Illinois State Police, and the Christian County Coroner's Office. The Christian County State's Attorney's Office is considering other charges in the case, said Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp. If you have questions about Medicare Part D, you might want to know that there will be an informal coffee with answers to questions about the Medicare Part D prescription drug program. It will be from 9 to 10 a.m. on Wednesday, February 10th, at the Decatur-Macon County Senior Center, 1430 North 22nd Street. The discussion will be held or it will be led by Outreach Counselors Judy Pfeiffer and Elaine Krause. The event is free and open to all ages. On page A7, we find some interesting articles in the Life section of the newspaper. This one is headlined, Freshen Up the Bedroom with New Headboard and Bedding. And it was written by Annie Kalovich, a Tribune News Service writer. If you haven't updated your bedroom in a while, you may find that some key elements have changed while you've been sleeping. For instance, bedroom furniture is not being sold in sets anymore, at least not at Ethan Allen. The look is more eclectic, said Katie Small, design center manager at the Wichita, Kansas store. And no longer do people sleep under heavy down comforters, even as we head into the coldest days of winter. Most people kick the duvet off the bed, said Brenda Cody of Ferguson Phillips. Now is the ideal time to assess your bedroom and take steps to refresh it, which in turn should refresh you. Redoing the bedroom according to current sensibilities will take into consideration not only decor, but health, and perhaps even some elements of feng shui, the ancient Chinese practice of harmonizing the elements of the environment. Here are four key ways to re-feather your nest. The first is upholstered headboard. If your furniture is still serving you well, but you want to feel fresh and new, the best way you can do that is to change the headboard, Small said. You don't have to match. The vast majority of headboards sold these days are upholstered rather than made in plain wood. Either way, a headboard adds the first layer of color or texture to what you're creating visually on the bed. It also adds much-needed height. Freestanding headboards with a bed skirt are no longer in fashion. Instead, beds either have head and footboards or a headboard with a platform rather than a footboard. Beyond design, if you're one of those people who doesn't have a headboard, you might consider one for another reason. As Americans, we're focused on the mattress and getting a good night's sleep, Cody said. If you don't have the structure, you don't have as much support. I think it makes a big difference. Many people are discovering that sleeping cool is one of the ingredients for sleeping better. And even while the dictates of design call for dressing the bed in layers, sheets, a light blanket or coverlet, then a duvet or other throw at the bottom of the bed, Cody said that most people sleep under only the sheet and coverlet. What we find the majority of the time is even when people have this many layers, they never pull up the duvet. Nobody likes to be hot. In fact, some places are no longer selling heavy down comforters. They're selling much lighter weight duvets and lighter down blankets. Also popular are natural fibers and new fabrics that are easier to care for. I think most companies now are taking into consideration the feel and the care of the fabric. We're even getting synthetic silks and polyester silks that are washable, she said. Her next point is that people may like to sleep cool, but they also like to turn down the thermostat to save on energy, and that can leave the bedroom too cold for comfort. She recommends an electric fireplace, or a space heater. If the air is warm enough, you can have the ambiance of the heat without the actual appearance. Another heating element is an electric blanket or mattress pad. If you wake up stiff in the morning from arthritis, the Arthritis Foundation recommends cranking up the blanket or mattress pad before you get up. The warmth will help you roll out of bed more limber, and you don't have to sleep warm the whole night for the benefits. Be sure you don't have a health condition that precludes an electric blanket. Also, keep the blanket from bunching up, as it produces a safety hazard. On the same page, we find Dear Abby's column. Dear Abby, my stepson just turned 7. My husband was granted custody because the mother was declared unfit due to her drug abuse. She was granted supervised visits until she can pass 2 consecutive drug tests. Over the last year and a half, her visits have become few and far between. My husband and I think it would be a good idea for Tony to start seeing a therapist again. He doesn't talk about his mother often, and I'm worried he may be bottling up a lot of his feelings. Tony is starting to ask more questions about his mom, like why he can't stay the night with her, why he can't live with her, and why he hasn't seen her much lately. I try not to say anything negative about her. Is it time to explain the situation to him? He is still so young, and I don't know how to explain things in a way he would understand. If you were me, what would you do? Signed, Stepmom in Alabama. Dear Stepmom, you and your husband are wise to want to prevent problems before they happen. If I were in your situation, I would talk to Tony's therapist, explain what's going on, and ask for pointers regarding his questions and his behavior. My instinct would be to tell the boy that his mother doesn't see him because she is sick. It's the truth. When he's older, he will need to know that there may be an inherited predisposition to addiction in his family. But for now, that can wait. Definitely contact his therapist if you think he/she was a good one. The next letter begins, Dear Abby, I used to be best friends with this girl I met in kindergarten. Over the years, we became like sisters and did everything together. We played Barbies, went on adventures, shopping, saw movies, and had sleepovers. As we grew older, we began trusting each other with our lives. I could tell her anything and everything, and I was there for her whenever she needed support or a shoulder to cry on. However, now that we are older, we have slowly noticed small differences in our lives. She became focused on her studies and art. I joined the cheerleading squad and became interested in meeting new people. Our lives have diverged, and now it's like we have become complete strangers. I want our friendship to go back to the way it was. What can I say or do to show her I miss the old her? And the letter is signed, Confused, Ex-Friend. Dear Confused, as people mature, it is not uncommon for their interests to diverge. This is normal, and it may be what has happened with you and your longtime friend. If you miss the closeness you once had, tell her so, but do not expect it to magically return your relationship to what it was. You're both sharing another adventure now, exploring the interests and relationships you are developing as adults. It's possible that in the future, your paths will converge again. When people are true friends, their ability to communicate on a meaningful level can last forever, despite intervals when they are not in contact. The featured editorial in today's issue is headlined, Obama Should Push for Fair Illinois Maps. When President Barack Obama addresses the General Assembly on Wednesday, he should expand his commitment to fair elections and fair political maps. We have to end the practice of drawing our congressional districts so that politicians can pick their voters and not the other way around, Obama told Congress and the nation during his State of the Union message last month. The president was referring specifically to Congress. Republicans control many of the state legislatures across the nation and thus get to draw the political maps. The result is an alarming lack of election competition. Of the 435 U.S. House districts up for election in November, only 21 are considered toss-ups. Another 37 are in what could best be described as in the leaning but undecided category, according to the Cook Political Report. That means 377 seats, roughly 9 out of 10, are uncontested. Want to know why people are disengaged? It's because the politicians have, in effect, removed folks from the political process. The situation is every bit as bad in Illinois. Although the Democrats control the General Assembly, so the maps are drawn to their liking. This year, all 118 seats in the Illinois House and 40 seats in the Senate are up for election. In the March primary, there are only 30 contested primaries. In most districts, the primary is the only race. In 2014, 49% of the lawmakers elected to the House and 63% of those elected to the Senate had no opponent in the primary or the general election. It's not because our General Assembly is doing such a bang-up job. Voters can't throw the bums out because there's no choice. There needs to be an end to such gerrymandering, whether the maps favor Republicans or Democrats. Obama would do well to throw his support behind the effort to change the state's constitution and make the map-drawing process more independent. The president is a registered voter in Illinois, so he could sign one of the petitions being circulated by Independent Maps, the group pushing for the amendment. At the very least, the president should repeat his plea and make it clear that politically drawn maps are evil, no matter which party benefits. The president may want to make sure he addresses those remarks directly to House Speaker Michael Madigan, who has worked the hardest of any politician to keep the status quo. The president is certainly aware of the state's political gridlock over budgets, pension reforms, and a host of other issues. There are many causes, but one of the main ones is that legislators in safe districts don't have to answer to their constituents. Obama should make clear that as a resident of the state, as the president, and as a leader of the Democratic Party, Illinois should work harder to draw fair political maps. A letter to the editor appears right below this column, and it seems appropriate. Term limits needed to end elite ruling class. Over the last several decades, we have developed an elite ruling class. There are people who have made their way into career government positions in Congress. This was never intended to be a career position, rather an opportunity to serve our fellow citizens for a few years and then go back to making a living as we did before. This is service, not a career. Once they discovered how much power they have, they made special laws to benefit themselves, such as health care for life and the sweetest pension plan anyone could ever imagine. They grant themselves pay raises with no connection to the cost of living or to job performance. The rest of us have Medicare, Social Security, and pensions tied to the cost of living index, the formula of which gets tinkered with every few years to ensure we don't get too much money. These are problems that most of us have to deal with, problems that never get solved. If Congress had to rely on Medicare and Social Security, I'm pretty sure that these problems would get solved quickly. The real problem is career politicians who make laws for us to live with while they exempt themselves. They make laws to benefit themselves and exclude us from those laws. A solution to these problems is called term limits. Two terms and you're out, with no health care for life and no pension deal. Just Medicare and Social Security, like the rest of us. While we're at it, let's prohibit former Congress members from ever being lobbyists, and let's make it illegal for others in the elite ruling class to buy Congress members. I mean the multi-billionaire conglomerates that make huge contributions to campaign funds in return for congressional favors. The signer of this letter is Gordon Schrischund of Decatur. Let's find out what Paul Osborne is saying in the online edition of the Decatur Tribune. In his City Beat column, he has this as a headline: "Look out! City Council ready to impose another tax, this time on motorists." Following a study session Monday evening, the City Council appears ready to vote for a motor fuel tax to raise revenue to repair our streets. Even though the reason for the tax is understandable, many streets are in terrible shape. Residents of Decatur are weary and angered by all of the fee and tax increases in recent years. A sunset on this new tax won't mean much, and it probably won't make the public feel any better about it. This will be a permanent tax, with or without the sunset, because there will always be a need for street repairs. This tax will address the need, but only a portion of it. I think the greater concern should be how much more the motor fuel tax will increase in the future, because more money will be needed to deal with the bad streets problem than this tax will provide. Osborne also shares a letter, or portions of a letter, from retired pastor Robert Walters, who was a Decatur native who now lives in Clarkston, Michigan. He was responding to a recent City Beat column about the lack of physical reminders of Lincoln heritage in Decatur. I'll quote some from that column. Walter says this: "You were so right about Decatur's need of physical reminders of its Lincoln heritage. Several years back, our adult son Bob and I took a personal history trip to central Illinois. Of course, we spent time in Springfield and New Salem, but when we came to Decatur, there was so much history and so few physical reminders of that history. There needs to be a replica of the family cabin in the Lincoln Log Cabin State Park. And downtown Decatur needs a building where folks can celebrate what happened here. The family lived here. He gave his first political speech here. He practiced law here." Going on with the letter: "Thank you for your efforts to make that happen on Lincoln Square. I hope leadership will rise up to try again to give Decatur a physical Lincoln presence fitting of his impact on our country and the world." Osborne then thanks Robert for sharing his perspective. And this is Paul Osborne speaking now. "While our city certainly has some statues of Abraham Lincoln, some plaques and storyboards, we need a more aggressive outreach using the technology of our age. We need interactive sites that visitors, especially younger generations, expect to see in this era. A plaque on a rock is no longer enough. There's a lot that can be done to enhance our Lincoln connections and make them compelling enough that people who travel to Springfield to see Lincoln will also stop in Decatur to see Lincoln here, too. While they are here, they will produce a revenue stream that the city certainly can use." His next topic is the casino fight. "How intense is the religious opposition to the city council moving ahead with any kind of action to locate a casino here? As I mentioned in last week's column, some pastors have come out stronger on the issue than I've seen them do on any issue in a long time. Some church bulletins carry articles on why members should be opposed to the casino, and pastors are also speaking out on the subject. What kind of an impact is all of this having?" Well, after Sunday morning church services, a couple of readers who had submitted letters to the editor in favor of the casino contacted me and requested that I not use the letters. They indicated they might submit another letter in the future. And that concludes Paul Osborne's column, City Beat, in the Decatur Tribune. This also concludes this reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 9th, 2016. This has been Carol Bond reading, and I look forward very much to reading with you again.